Hi, this is Tony Robbins. Welcome to another edition of Power Talk. Who are you? Who are you really? Think about it. Your answer to that question is shaping your destiny. It's going to determine how you're going to respond to innumerable situations. Our beliefs definitely control our behavior. So the beliefs you have about one person, like a friend of yours, will determine how you interact with that person. The beliefs you have about a food will determine whether you eat that food. That's pretty basic. But the beliefs you have about people in general are global beliefs, and that'll affect all kinds of relationships. And the beliefs you have about yourself are the most potent beliefs of all. Not only the beliefs you have about what you're capable of, but the beliefs you have about who you are. Because you and I need to remember, it's not our capabilities that determine our behaviors. Our capabilities are constant. What we do is based on identity. I remember an interesting story that was told to me years ago that represents this idea of identity. It's the story of the frog and the scorpion. It seems one day a scorpion wanted to make his way across a river, and he saw a frog and thought, what a great way. So he called out to the frog. He said, Mr. Frog, he said, I'm a scorpion and I need to get across to my family on the other side. He said, would you be willing to let me ride on your back across to the other side? It's the only way I can get across. The frog looked at him and said, I don't think so. He said, how come? The frog said, you're a scorpion. Scorpions sting frogs. Well, I'd get halfway across with you out there and you'd sting me and I'd die. And the scorpion looked at him and said, oh, Mr. Frog, he said, you're not thinking with your little frog brain. He said, if I stung you, he said, I'd kill you, but I'd drown too. He said, I wouldn't do that. I'd be killing myself. And the frog seemed a little confused by this and said, okay. He let the scorpion jump on his back. He started to swim across the river, and about halfway across, sure enough, the scorpion stings the frog. He can't even believe it. He looks at him, he's going down for the third time, and he turns to the scorpion and he says, I can't believe you did this. Why'd you do this? I'm dying, but you're going to die too. Why? And the scorpion said, because I'm a scorpion, and that's what scorpions do. They sting frogs. What does this story mean? It represents one of the most potent forces in the human personality, and that is this. One of our strongest needs within our personality is to make certain that our behavior is consistent with our identity. Even if the identity we hold for ourselves is negative. What do I mean? Well, there's a very big difference between feeling stupid, doing something stupid, or knowing you are stupid. Now, that may sound like semantics, but it makes a huge difference in how you live your life. We all feel stupid at times. We all do stupid things at times. But if you make the jump from feeling or doing something stupid in the moment to believing you are stupid, that belief about who you are will color every single behavior you're involved with for the rest of your life. It defines you and it limits you. You see, the beliefs we have about who we are, our identity, creates the boundaries within which we live our lives. And it isn't limited to something like whether or not we think we're smart or stupid. You say, well, I would never say I'm stupid. I'm smarter than that. Well, maybe you put it in the area of that I'm a procrastinator. See, it's different to have been a person who's procrastinated at times or to procrastinate in the moment than to know you're a procrastinator. Once you decide that's who you are, that behavior will be consistent just because you need to be consistent with your own identity. It works in every context you can imagine. It's different to know that you've got 10 extra pounds on your body. That's different than knowing you're a fat person or that you're a compulsive personality. You got to be very careful of the labels that you create for yourself or you allow others to give you. Because they begin to define your experience. They begin to change what you notice about yourself, what you're willing to try, what you're not willing to try. They define the way you live. I can tell you, I've met with people over the years who tried everything to make a change and had been even successful in changing a behavior, like let's say stop smoking or stop using drugs or something, but it was usually short term and it didn't last. Why didn't it last for them previously? And now I worked with them and we got something that now 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, it still seems to be working. In fact, there's not even a struggle. They're not working not to smoke. They're not working not to take the drugs. Why? What do we do different this time? Well, in the past, they tried just to change their behavior, but they didn't change their identity. They didn't change their beliefs about who they were as a person. See, I can show you how to get off drugs and not use drugs. But if you believe you're a drug addict and then you don't use drugs for 6 months, I guarantee you it's going to be a struggle because you're fighting who you are the whole time. And eventually there's a good chance you'll go back or for the rest of your life, you'll have to go to sessions where you try to remind yourself that you can't use drugs. You know, there are plenty of people who've been addicted to drugs for years, hard stuff. And one day they've quit and never touched it again. How did they do that? Wouldn't it drive you crazy till you figured out someone made a change like that? A change from Saul to Paul, where one day what you loved, you now hate, and what you once hated, you now love. That's an identity change. That's powerful. That happens when you no longer see yourself as a drug addict. See, you can't be a drug addict and expect your behavior to be easy to change. It's much harder to change who you are in most people's perception than to change a behavior. See, that's the shift. You have to become the kind of person who would never even consider drugs in a million years. Think about it. Isn't there something in your life that you would never do? I mean, never. I know one for me is I would never murder another person. I mean, there's not even a question in my mind about that. So the thing to think about is this. If you would never murder someone, in your case also, why wouldn't you do it? So it's unthinkable. Why is it unthinkable? Because I would just never do that. Why would you never do that? Because it's not part of your identity. It's not part of your beliefs about who you are. See, your beliefs about who you are define what you will and will not do. See, it goes way beyond what you're capable of. Are you capable of murder? Some people say, well, maybe I'm capable, but I would never do it. There's a big difference between capability and how you live. And closing that gap requires an understanding of identity, an understanding of how to stop pursuing the kind of person you want to be, and in a moment, suddenly being that person right now and from this day forward. That is the potency of identity, and it's accomplished in many ways. It can happen by a defining moment. You know, most people think of Mother Teresa, and they think of an incredible woman, as we should, an incredible giver. She lived in India, and she taught children in a school. And you know what they were? They were the most privileged children in India. Most of them were English. She could see the ghetto out from where she was, and she never entered it. Till one day when she was walking home, a man who was struggling through the ghetto stumbled forward towards her and fell into her arms. She realized he was dying. She didn't know what to do. She couldn't just leave him there. So she took him to a hospital. And sure enough, he was of a lower caste. And so as a result, they wouldn't take care of him. They kept putting him further back in the line. She said he's going to die, but no one would help her. So she went to another hospital and then a third. And finally, she took him home. And there he ended up dying in her arms. Her life was changed forever. That was a defining moment for Mother Teresa. She took a train ride out of the city. And when she came back, she was a different woman. And she had a different mission, a different focus. No longer could she stand by and watch those who were desperate live in that way. She said, although they may die, they will die with love and they will die with dignity. I will be there for these people. And that word, that statement, that decision, that identity touched lives around the world. By the way, you may be asking, well, Tony, why do people behave consistent with an identity that makes no sense? Because in our culture, consistency is constantly rewarded and change is often met with pain. I don't just mean pain within yourself. I mean pain from society. Think about it. In our culture, what do we call someone who says one thing and later on they do something different? We call them inconsistent, a liar, somebody you can't trust, somebody who's wishy-washy. I mean, we could go on and on with the labels. Nobody wants those. We link pain to creating change, especially at the level of who you are. Hey, how come you didn't tell me you're that kind of person? Well, you might say, well, I've been changing. Oh, yeah, sure you have. But on the other side, what do we call somebody who stays consistent? Somebody says that they're a certain way and they behave that way over and over again. Sure enough, that person is trustworthy. That person, somebody's honest. That's somebody you can count on. That person is stable. So what this does is it tends to lock us into whatever identity we used to have. And that becomes a big limitation. Either that limit or the limit that comes from being successful. See, when we become successful, oftentimes we become superstitious. We don't want to lose what we've got. After all, we worked so hard to be in this position. Somebody comes by and says, hey, you could change that. You could make it better. They go, wait a second. You don't understand. This is what's made me successful being this way. Well, there's a great phrase that I kind of paraphrase from Einstein. It's not exactly what he said, but if he thought of it, I'm sure he would have said it. It kind of goes like this. And that is, I've been using this on myself, so I don't know who actually said it, but it came from my reading of Einstein. And that is that really, in essence, the level of thinking that's gotten us to where we are is not what's going to get us to where we want to go. See, to get to where we want to be, we got to take on a new level of thinking. We got to know that what we've done up until now has been great. There's nothing wrong with it. It's fantastic. But to get to the next level, we've got to look at life in a new way. And one of those new looks is we got to perceive ourselves in a different way. Not just our capability, but who we are right now. Not someday, today. That shift begins the minute you begin to consciously define yourself instead of letting the environment do it for you. Because think about it. How do most of us define ourselves? Where do we come up with our identity anyway? Well, it comes from a variety of environments, but maybe the best way to answer the question is ask a different one. How do you define the people around you? How do you know if they're a friend, if they're a good person or not? The way we define other people, the way we discover their identity is we watch them. We listen to them. We judge people's identity usually by their behavior. Isn't that true? I mean, think about it. Somebody treats you real harshly several times each time you're around them. Pretty soon you go, I know that person. That person's a jerk. You know what the challenge is? Once you decide that they're a jerk, and if that becomes a belief, or worse, if that becomes a conviction where you know they're a jerk, nothing's going to change your opinion about it. Then even if they're really a nice person later on, they were just having a horrible day. Maybe they were being a jerk that day, but that's not who they are. Once you've defined them that way, guess what? Nothing they can do can change it. So you got to know that sometimes we do the same thing to ourselves. That's the danger. Sometimes we do something terrible and we say, gosh, I'm a terrible person. Or we do something stupid and we go, I'm a stupid person. Sometimes we get caught in a pattern of behavior that's undisciplined. But you know what? If we start saying, look, I'm an undisciplined person, now it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If now all of a sudden you start defining yourself as an undisciplined person, if that becomes your belief as to who you are, not that you're capable of being undisciplined, everyone's capable of that, not that you've been that way at times, but that's who you are. Once you put that label upon yourself, now your future behavior and therefore the results of your life are going to be colored by it. So you got to be careful. I'll give you an example of how this has been used to manipulate people in a very negative way. During the Korean War, our American POWs collaborated with the enemy more times than any time in our history. Now, how come? Because the Chinese communists understood the power of identity. They understood that you can only get a person to do something by force so long. But if you can change their perceptions, if you can change their philosophy, if you can change the way they think, if you can change their belief about who they are, you can change their behavior permanently. And that was their goal. See, the American fighting man knew who he was. He had an identity. And he also knew if somebody tries to torture you, you know all you give them is name, rank, and serial number. And that's worked for gosh only knows how many years. But the Chinese communists used what they called the leniency policy. They decided that what they wanted to do was try a different approach. They would bring the POW in and sit him down and say, listen, you don't have to be afraid of us. You know, we're only your enemy because your government's attacking us. We're just caring people. We're just defending ourselves. Listen, we don't want to hurt you. Here, have a cigarette. And they'd sit and talk with the gentleman. And this American POW would be very suspicious. But after 4 or 5 or 6 hours of talking and having a nice conversation, he'd begin to get a little tired and a little exhausted and a little worn down. But these people were so cordial. They'd say, look, your government doesn't care about you. Don't you understand the kind of unrest that's happening in your nation right now? They said, we care about our people. They said, let me ask you a question. What's really not perfect about America? Are you going to try and tell us it's perfect? And the American POW would usually respond with, well, of course, America's not perfect. That's all they needed. Their whole goal was to break into the shell of identity and get you to make some very small commitments and then enlarge them. What do I mean? Well, they'd say, well, how is America not perfect? The person will say, well, you know, we have unemployment, I guess. You know, have some people out of work. They say, well, let me ask you a question. In communism, do we have people unemployed? POW say, well, I don't know. They said, no, we don't. Everyone is employed in a communist nation. They said, do me a favor, just write this down. Just to be fair, write down, America's not perfect. The guy would say, wait a second, you want me to make a comment? I don't want to write that down. He said, well, is it true? You just said it. It's true, isn't it? The POW said, well, yeah. And he'd write down, well, America's not perfect. And they'd write down how America's not perfect. Write down that communism, we have people who are employed. And sure enough, out of exhaustion and out of compliance, without being forced to, the American POW would have a document now in front of him that later on he would even sign that would basically describe why democracy was terrible and communism was great. Now, he's got to be able to explain to himself why he did this. Remember, we judge who we are by our own behaviors. So sure enough, he looks at his behavior and says, I wasn't forced. I wasn't coerced. How come I put this down? Well, because it's true. Then if that wasn't bad enough, he would go back to his cell and the other cellmates would look at him and say, what happened? You've been gone for 18 hours, 12 hours. You don't look like you're marked up. What's the deal? He said, well, they just asked me some questions. And sure enough, in a few minutes later, over the loudspeaker, the Chinese communist would read this essay signed by him. And they'd say, did you write that? And he would, well, say, yeah. And they'd say, well, how could you do that? Did they beat you? Did they torture you? What'd they do? And he said, well, nothing. Well, how could you do this? Well, the American POW would finally, at that moment, he'd have to be able to justify. So he'd say, well, because it's true. And that moment, the Chinese communists had accomplished what they wanted, his identity began to change. Because two things happened. He began to defend a whole nother view. He began to believe that this was an accurate representation of his deepest feelings. He was simply judging a set of small actions that were orchestrated, directed without his awareness. But worse, now others saw him as a collaborator, and they would begin to isolate him, sometimes even physically break out and fight or beat him. Now who's the enemy? His fellow POWs. And as a result, he would collaborate secretly with the enemy on a larger scale again than any time in our history. This example should show you the power of identity. I can tell you a more modern example is a group of people that social psychologists also manipulated for the purpose of a study. They brought these people in and got them to see themselves as the kind of people that contribute in a variety of areas in their life. They pointed out to them the places that they'd given help to other people, and they got them to do very small actions to support people in the hospital. Gradually, their identity changed to one of a contributor to those in need in the hospital. These people were then asked to donate bone marrow, one of the single most painful operations you can go through, for a total stranger. And the pressure, not just social pressure, but the pressure we feel inside to remain consistent with our own view of ourselves, caused these people to comply. Fortunately, in the project, they didn't make them, but they got all the way to the point where they'd be actually giving their bone marrow before they were told they didn't have to. This is the power of identity. We will behave consistent with our identity, even if our identity is negative. So we must be very careful about what we buy into. I mean, the classic example is with our children. The Pygmalion effect, I'm sure you've heard of it. What it is a research study that's been done over the years where they take teachers and they tell them that a particular student is absolutely outstanding, that they're a gifted child, for example, and that they'll need to be challenged a lot, though, because otherwise they'll just slough off. You know what invariably happens? The child becomes the leader of the class. Or if it's a group of children that they bring to the teacher, those students begin to excel higher than almost anyone else in the class, all because of expectation. What's really fascinating is in some of these studies, the children previously had been problem kids who had difficulty in learning. See, this Pygmalion effect works in our lives as well. I can tell you in my own life, the Pygmalion effect certainly has shaped a part of who I am. I can remember in the third grade, I was not a good student. I was not particularly smart. I hated mathematics. But at the school I went to, they were very strict. And in the third grade, in the first part of the year, I think the thing we were studying at that time was multiplication tables. And we had to have them all memorized, and our teacher drilled us like crazy. Well, halfway through the third grade, I got transferred to another school. And when I went to that school, they had just started multiplication tables. I was already done. I knew them all. I'd memorized them all. And sure enough, when the teacher had a question, boom, I had the answer. When we went to go take a test, instead of taking 30 minutes to take the test, I was done in 5 minutes. I just whipped it all out, handed it to her. And the teacher looked at me and said, "Wow, you're outstanding." And I believed her, you know. All of a sudden, I had all this free time. She said, "What do you want to do?" I said, "No, I don't know." She said, "Well, why don't you go to the library and study something you're interested in?" So I went over there and I got interested in what makes light work. How does light happen? I read these books on light, and she asked me to come and describe to her what I learned, and I told her, and she got fascinated. At least I thought she was fascinated, and reinforced me even more. And then I started writing reports on Mars and the planets and the solar system and gravity. And within a couple of years of being this way, I didn't want to lose the edge. I was now the student in class that was always ahead. I was always the leader. By the time I was in the fifth grade, I'd take my entire science book that the whole school year we'd only go through half of it, and during the weekends, I'd read it all. I'd take all the tests. And the teacher would say, "Well, what do you want to do for the free period?" I became that person who was always learning, always growing, always fascinated. And pretty soon, normal school seemed boring to me. And they all said, "Boy, look at how quickly he excels." So they gave me a test. And they said, "Sure enough, he's a mentally gifted minor. My goodness, I know how to label. This is pretty exciting. I'm gifted." What do you think that would do to you to have somebody tell you you're gifted? If you didn't get that gift earlier, why don't you give that gift to yourself right now? We're all gifted. All that is a darn label. I did well in a particular area because I got reinforced. See, the same thing happens on the opposite side, though. So many children do poorly on something because they have a different strategy or because they don't understand something yet or it hasn't been communicated in their style. And then we assume they're learning disabled. They live with that label. And you know what? That label doesn't just affect them and their ability to learn. It affects their self-image. It affects the way they look at their lives. And all of us have wounds in this area. I just cleaned mine up because I got sick of it, because I realized it's all garbage. I get to determine who I am. The day I decided that was the day my life changed. And that's the day I want this to be for you. You know this already. You know it consciously. But you got to remember the power of a belief, the sense of absolute certainty. You've got to tap into those beliefs that affect you most. And those are the beliefs you have about who you are today, not who you're going to be, who you are right now. So let me ask you that question again. Who are you? I mean, who are you really? There's so many ways you could define yourself, but how do you? Because the definition you have of yourself is creating the boundaries again that you're living your life within. See, what do you have a conviction about when you describe yourself? Who do you feel certain you are? Not what other people have said about you, not what people expect from you. In your gut, who are you? See, are you a leader or are you a follower? Are you a person who makes a difference or are you a victim? Are you someone who's constantly trying to figure out how to grow? Or are you somebody who is constantly looking for an excuse? Are you merely a collection of habit patterns? Or are you something deeper, something richer? Are you merely your past? Or are you who you're defining now? I would suggest to you that right now is a moment you could begin to ask this question and really begin to give the answer. Instead of saying, this is an esoteric tape. What the heck is he talking about here? Who am I? What is this stuff? I want some tools, Mr. Robbins. Maybe you could really stop for a second and really consider the answer. Who are you? See, when I ask the question of people, I usually get one of three responses. Either a blank stare, which is somebody who goes into trance, or I get the Popeye response. I am what I am, you know? But there are a few people who actually stop and they think about, who am I? How am I define myself? Because see, we all want to be able to define ourselves. We want to show how we're different, how we're unique. Otherwise, you're no different than the person who's sitting next to you. How do you have a sense of identity? Identity is nothing but definition. And with identity come parameters, parameters of who you are mentally, emotionally, physically. How do you describe who you are to yourself? Be open with yourself to ask the question anew. Who are you really? The way you're defining yourself is controlling how you're responding to this tape. It'll control your relationships. It'll control your occupation. It controls the way you think, the way you feel, and what you do. Now, how can you define yourself? Let me help you out with this so it doesn't just go off into the distance here. And if you're driving, while you're asking this question, notice what's going on around you as well. Don't go into a deep trance on me here. So how can you define yourself? There's so many ways. Or again, that's what identity is. To give you a clear definition, it's how you define yourself to yourself. How do you know you're different than your brother or your sister or your neighbor? What makes you different? What makes you the person that you can discern as being unique? Those elements that you use to describe yourself with conviction are the ones I call identity. So for example, some people, when they describe their identity, describe themselves by their emotions. That's basically who they think they are. So a person will say, well, I'm a loving person. That's who I am. Or if I say, who are you? They might say, well, I'm a peaceful person or I'm an intense person. Some people don't use their emotions at all to describe their identity. Some people choose roles. Well, I'm just a mom. And I say, what? Just a mom? A mom is so many things. What are you, crazy? Come on here. A mom has got to be everything. She's the best friend. She's the teacher. She's a student. She's fun. She's outrageous. She's a stimulator. She's an entertainer. I mean, she's everything. You can't just be a mom. You better expand your identity. But see, a lot of people go, well, I'm just a mom. I'm just a dad. Expand that view. But notice, how else do you define yourself? Start with how you already define yourself. Maybe you do it by your job. Somebody will say, well, I'm a doctor, or I'm a priest, or I'm a salesman, or I'm a lawyer. That's one of the challenges. See, they don't say, I practice law. They say, I am a lawyer. So they go home at night and they cross-examine their spouse and wonder why they got problems. You know, we got to get beyond that process. You got to know that you're more than what you do. But again, just start with what you have. I keep jumping to the next step. I want to expand you, but let's figure out how you already see yourself. So you need to start with that so you're aware of where you are. What else could you use? Well, you could use your roles. You could use your identity as emotions. You could do your occupation. What would be another category? Oh, metaphors. Some people use things like, I'm king of the hill, or I'm at the bottom of the rock pile. You know, those metaphors, as we've already described in the previous Power Talk, really shape a lot of how you think and how you feel and what's possible for you. What else could you use? Well, some people describe themselves based upon the feedback they've had in their past, something like, I'm worthless, or I'm special, or maybe by their spiritual beliefs, I'm Jewish, or their looks, I'm beautiful, I'm ugly, I'm old, or maybe by their accomplishments. You know, I'm the 1960s Spring Valley High homecoming queen. Hello! Some people have lost track of who they really are. You're not your past. Some people define it by what they're not. Oftentimes, I ask people, who are you? And they respond by saying, well, I'm not this, I'm not my father, I'm not my brother, I'm not like this person, I'm not like that. You know what? Part of how you define who you are that's different than other people's, what you're not, but don't make your whole identity based on what you're not, or otherwise you're pretty limited in what you are. Some people describe themselves based on their past, their failures, for example. Other people do it based upon their future. How are you defining yourself? Who are you? What's the essence of your life? I keep asking you this question because I want you to keep asking it of yourself. Keep refining the answer. And in a moment, I want you to pull over if you're in your car, or I want you to stop what you're doing, and I want you to stop this tape, and I want you to write who you are. Describe yourself to yourself so that once and for all, you can get an idea of what's going on unconsciously. Because here's the thing I don't think I've made clear. The biggest challenge with identity is most of us are not conscious about what our beliefs are about who we are. See, that's their power to control us. They're unconscious. But if we get really conscious about our beliefs and we stare at them and take a real good look, we'll immediately start seeing what the limitations are in our beliefs. And we'll also see some of the benefits, because the truth of the matter is, you probably have a lot of great beliefs about who you are as well. So right now, I want you to stop this tape, no more conversation, take out your journal or a piece of paper and just write down the question that philosophers have asked for thousands of years. Who am I? And describe in detail who you are. And when you're done with that, take at least 5 minutes, minimum of five, and then come back here and let's talk some more. Stop the tape now. Welcome back. Now, I assume I'm welcoming you back, right? You really did turn this tape off and you really did do the exercise, didn't you? If not, go do it. Because if you didn't do that, why didn't you? Because you're busy? You're too busy? You said, Tony, I'm really busy. I got a lot to do. I don't have time to think about my identity. Give me a break. And more scary than that, do you do this in a lot of areas of your life? Do you unconsciously identify yourself as a person who listens to things and then doesn't act upon them? I doubt it. Because I think if you're the kind of person who listens to this kind of tape and you're listening every single month, you obviously are committed to make your life better. So now that you know who you are, who do you really want to be? See, however you limited yourself in the past, or whatever, even if you think your identity is really strong, in order to achieve all that you want, who would you have to become? Think about it. Would you have to be more gregarious, more outrageous, more fun, more passionate, more disciplined? Whatever you have to be, you need to become it now. Not someday. You don't need to make it a goal. You need to fuse with that identity. You need to start thinking, if I was this person, how would I breathe? How would I walk? How would I talk? How would I treat people? What would I do when I woke up in the morning? How would I speak to myself? How would I think about life? And then you need to think about this and literally fuse with it. Imagine stepping into the body of this person and becoming this person, and then immediately go out and act this way. I remember years ago, I used to tell people, listen, if you want to change your life, conduct your life as if you were a public figure. I said, think about how public figures have to be, how they have to live, how they have to treat people, what they have to do. And I said, if you do that long enough, the quality of your life will literally transform. Well, you know what? I became that person. I became a public figure and I wasn't one, but now I am. It's an amazing experience. What's great about it is I don't have to behave any different than I have for years. The way you hear me now is the way I am. This is who I am. I don't have to fake it or act like it. This is who Tony Robbins is. So now when people see me in an airport, I don't have to be constantly monitoring myself and saying, well, am I being appropriate or am I going to be misinterpreted? I'm just being who I am. That identity is real for me. And you might want to take that advice again. You might want to think about how would you conduct your life if you're a public figure? How would you be if you were already living your dream? See, if you'll start behaving, thinking, feeling, and knowing you're the person you've been pursuing, I can promise you many of the goals that are way out there, you'll start to experience them as a reality right now, or whatever is necessary to make them real will show up. That's the power of identity. I can tell you that what shaped my life is I got a vision of who I wanted to be, and I defined who I was by my future. I got this clear vision of the kind of person I wanted to be, and I brought it forward and stepped into the picture and started living it, even though the environment wasn't consistent with it. And I got a conviction that this is who I am, regardless of what the world thinks. I know this is who I am, regardless of what I was earning or what people said, good or bad. Nothing could change my character. That was constant, that reputation may come or go based upon what people would think, but my character was the one thing I could count on. And as long as I knew who I was, that my outside world would eventually reflect what I knew was true inside. That was the day my life changed. So now that you've got this expanded view of yourself, you did the assignment, right? I'm assuming that. I don't have to have another talk with you, do I? The bottom line is, now that you have this expanded view of yourself, you got a bigger view of who you are, how do you make it more real? You got to fuse with it. Now, one of the ways to do this is to go out and actually think about what would this person do? What are some of the actions this person would take, and go take those. For example, if you believe that you are an intelligent person, it's because you had an idea called I'm an intelligent person. And at one point you didn't believe it. It was just an idea. It was like a tabletop with no legs. But then you took some tests successfully. People told you you were intelligent. You noticed you could figure some challenges out. And each one of these became a leg underneath your tabletop. So now the table is solid. It'll stand there. It's a solid belief. You feel certain about it. Well, that's the same way you can help yourself to change your identity. Get some references. Go out and do some of the things that a person like this would do. Now, don't limit yourself to this technique, because you can change your identity right now by making a decision. In fact, I know a good friend of mine who went out. Her name is Deborah. She's a brilliant lady. She's an adventurous, outrageous, passionate woman that so many of my friends liked. And what's interesting about Deborah, I've known her through the years, is I've watched her evolve and become stronger. But she didn't realize how much she'd grown within herself as much as other people did looking at her from the outside. And when I talked to her about identity one day, it became a really powerful conversation, because she said, you know, I've always considered myself to be a wimp. I mean, for years, I've seen myself as a wimp. And, you know I'm capable of doing incredible things, but I'm still a wimp. I said, what are you talking about? She said, well, you know, I've done all these crazy things. I've skydived and, you know, I've even walked on the fire and stuff. And I know I did those things. And when I told my friends, they said, man, you're such an adventurous person. I thought, what are you, crazy? I was a wimp. I was scared. I'm a wimp who skydived. And I thought, isn't that amazing? When we have a conviction about who we are, sure enough, nothing is going to, even new experiences sometimes don't change us. We've got to be willing to see ourselves differently and then get the reference experiences. Otherwise, we could have experience to back up the idea that we're smart but not notice it. We don't notice we do well on tests. We only notice the ones we don't do well on, and that reinforces the limiting belief. So that day she said, you know, I'm going to go skydiving. I have decided that I really am an adventurous person, and that is how you make the change. Sooner or later, no matter what experiences you have to make a decision, a real decision within yourself, where you cut off any possibility of being anyone other than the person you've defined. She said, you know, I got on the plane, I looked around and saw these other people that were going up in the plane, and you know how they are when the people are brand new, gonna go skydiving, and they're trying to look like they're real confident, but they're really scared to death inside, and they have those permigrins on their face. And I said, yes, I've seen it. She said, I just looked at those people and said, that's how I used to be. And by the way, this is a great secret for you in changing your identity. If you find yourself utilizing an old style of communication or an old behavior that doesn't really represent you well, look at that behavior and think to yourself, that's how I used to be. Remind your brain that that's not who you are anymore. It'll reinforce your new identity and strengthen a new set of behaviors. The bottom line is, she said that she got up there and she said, you know, that's how I used to be. Who I am now is an adventurous, passionate woman. I'm here to love this experience. And she said she jumped out of that airplane and had the best time that she's ever had. She landed on the ground. She was in ecstasy. And she said she'd never felt that way. She was always exhausted by the trip and trying to feel good about it. This is the power of changing identity, and you can make it happen in a moment, the moment you decide. Now, for some people to decide, by the way, they need to go through a ritual. Throughout human history, people have used rituals to change their identity, not only within themselves, but the way other people see them. Because the way other people see you and the things they expect from you tend to influence your behavior if you're not clear yourself who you are. You got to be careful. You got to have such a conviction about who you are that nobody can sway you. You know who you are inside, regardless of whether you're getting the results you want or not in the short term. But if you want to make a difference, look at what would be a good ritual. Again, if you look at the African culture, for example, I remember years ago when I saw the movie Roots, and seeing Kunta Kinte, who's a friend of mine, LeVar Burton, who played that role so powerfully. But Kunta Kinte was part of a village, and how did a boy know he was a man? There was a specific ritual, so on one day, he transformed. The boys in the village kept talking about, they knew the day was coming. They heard stories that on the day you become a man, somebody came and put a hood over your head, and they took you to this special place and took you through this ritual. And that's exactly what happened. And the rituals were varied, and one of them I will not describe, but I can only tell you it was somewhat painful, and it was a way for them to have physical evidence he was a man. He came back walking different, literally, and he was wearing a special outfit. And sure enough, when he came back, the whole village now, because he was wearing that outfit and had been through the ritual, knew he was now a man and began to treat him differently. Our environment reinforces or takes away from identity. That's why we've got to decide the identity we want within ourselves. Today, how do people know if they're a man or a woman? Well, I guess the ritual in our culture is drinking. In Judaism, how does a boy know he's a man? He has a bar mitzvah. The girls have their version of that process. So we've missed a lot of that in our culture. But we found ways to replace it. They're just not quite as clear. And maybe we found ways they're not real resourceful. Going and getting wasted on your 21st birthday may not be the most powerful way of being able to identify yourself as a person who's free to do what they choose. Maybe there's a better way. But regardless, think of what might be a nice ritual for you. Maybe it's something crazy. Maybe, for example, you have excess weight. You used to think of yourself as a fat person. As long as you believe you're a fat person, not just somebody who has excess weight, if that becomes your identity, that you're a fat person, sure enough, you're going to find it very difficult to change. In fact, you can do all the right things, but you'll return to that identity. You'll start overeating again or do whatever's necessary to get consistent with your belief for who you are. So maybe what you need to do is go through a ritual, one that's stronger than all the diets you've been on. Maybe you need to figure something out unique that'll really jar you. Like one day you burn all your clothes except one outfit. And then you go out and you buy all new clothes at a size that's reasonable for you to be able to reach. And you know you got to keep wearing that outfit till you get there. I'm only speaking partially with tongue in cheek. I mean, we need to get more outrageous in the way we approach things. The reason I've used the firewalk for years is because people tend to transform a lot of their beliefs about who they are. It's not the firewalk has any power. Anybody could walk on fire. You could do it tomorrow. And I tell people that when I first get to the firewalk, I said, you could do it right now. All that's stopping you is your limiting beliefs and having a little bit of strategy. But you know what happens? Intellectually, they know they're capable. Everybody knows they're capable. But it's when you do something, that's when you know you've changed. And what happens is they get on the other side of this fire and their brain says, my gosh, if I can get myself to do this and it's this easy, what else that I used to think was so difficult or impossible that now is probably just as easy? It begins to change their picture of who they are. I used references like this in all kinds of areas. I did it with skydiving. I did it with firewalking. I did it with karate when I learned how to break through wood in less than an hour. When I worked with the army, all kinds of different events and situations. Situations where I opened up my heart and I was vulnerable. And I put myself on the line and all of a sudden people were even more loving to me. And I learned, hey, vulnerability is power. All of those references have had an impact on who I perceive myself as being now. And the same is true of you. But what you got to do is consciously decide what references should you seek out. What references would change your identity if you really took part of them and decided that they meant you had made a major change in who you'd become. I know, for example, my son Tyler, who had been a mechanic for many years, and in that environment, he found, as a generalization, that a lot of guys in that environment had been influenced by cultural values, that the way to get out of pain was to go drink. And so sure enough, he found himself doing some of the same things, the same values were there, the same kind of identity, the same kind of lifestyle. Well, his identity changed. One day he began to look around and say, man, I am better than this. I'm more than this. And we began to find a new environment where now his friends are, he's now a commercial helicopter pilot today. And boy, those guys don't go drink. You can't go drink. You don't go do that. You find joy and passion in being more unique and doing something very few people on earth have the capability of doing, much less the privilege. And I've seen his whole identity change. I'll never forget a day when we went to Fiji and we were getting off the plane and we're filling out those yellow slips and you have to fill out the little section where it says, what's your occupation? And he wrote down commercial pilot. He looked at it and he smiled real big and he said, wow, I like that. And I could see that little gleam in his eye. In that moment, he really got it even more. That's who he is now. He's more than what he thought of himself as being before. I'm so proud of him. Or during the same trip, watching the evolution of identity of my youngest son, Jarek. I mean, we first got there and everybody's going to go out and go snorkeling, you know, off the reefs. Well, he wasn't terribly enthusiastic about the idea. Let's just put it that way. And I took him out there and he got to the edge and looked down and said, no, I don't think I want to do this. And I said, okay, no problem. I said, why don't we just do this one little thing? And I use the same technique as the Chinese. I said, let's just do this one little thing over here. And I took him out off the sand in this little tiny area where there's like this little swimming hole and a lot of fish. And sure enough, he got addicted to that. And gradually we went a little further. And the next thing you know, he was out on the boat and jumping out in the middle of the ocean, swimming around these huge fish. And the next night we had a night dive. Now there are a lot of people that are divers who've been diving for 10, 15 years and they've never done a night dive. Well, next thing you know, Jarek wants to come out on a night dive with us. So he's out there snorkeling with me, hand in hand, going out there into the water. All of a sudden, he doesn't want me. He's swimming with somebody else, having an incredible time, being safe, being intelligent, but his whole identity. And within a week, it changed. You could see him. He walked different. He laughed different. He was more outgoing. He started to see himself as an adventurer, as the kind of person that could go and make things happen, person who could immerse themselves. And his identity changed literally that quick. See, I'm getting across, hopefully, one singular potent message, and that is this. Your life is defined by your beliefs, your convictions of who you are. That is the essence of what's controlling you. And if you ever try to change a behavior and it didn't last, it's because you changed the behavior for the moment, but you didn't change the controlling force. Your perception of who you are, that is what's got to shift. And maybe for you it's subtle, and maybe for you it's huge. I don't know. But I can tell you this, the first step is what I said earlier. Become aware of the unconscious beliefs you have about who you are. And again, those beliefs are sometimes reflected in your behavior, sometimes not, so that's not the way to define it. Just sit down and answer the question, who am I? It's the question that philosophers have asked for thousands of years, and it's one you deserve to ask yourself and give it enough time. Spend at least 10 minutes answering the question who you are. I know you're busy, okay, but take the time to ask the question and don't just give the Popeye response, I am what I am. Stop and think and give some meaningful answers of the first things that come out of your gut. And even if you don't like them, like, you know, if you say something like, well, I'm inconsistent or I'm a person that never falls through, write those things down. It's okay. The first step is to notice what you believe. And you know what? You probably have references to back up those beliefs. Remember, you can find references to back up the idea that anybody is a good person or anybody's a bad person. If you look for something, you'll find a reference to back it up. If you want to back up the idea that people are basically rotten and they'll rip you off, anybody has references to back it up if they want to. If you want to back up the idea that people are good people and they care, everyone's got references to back that up if they look deeply enough. So the fact that you believe something in the past does not mean it was true. Just find out first what you've been believing about yourself. Write it down. Then step two, immediately begin to question those limiting beliefs. Say, is that who I am or is that how I used to act? That's a very important question. Just because I've acted that way a bunch of times in the past, am I my past or am I who I decide to be now? Could I change my entire life right now, regardless of how I've been in the past? And because I behave that way, is that because that's who I am at the deepest level? Is that who I am at the core? Is that the essence of who I am? I doubt it. Who we are is spirit. We're more than our physical bodies. We're more than beliefs. We're more than values. Somewhere inside of you, there's a part of you that's everlasting. There's a part of you that's never ending. You need to check in with that. When you start feeling overwhelmed or you start feeling like, I can never accomplish this or I'm just not cut out for this, remember, you're cut out for whatever you decide to be cut out for. You have the capacity. You are bigger than any challenge you could ever meet in your life. Connect with a greater source. Remember the miracle that your life represents. See, if you just remember what's going on inside of you right now, just for you to be listening to me, all the processes with a heart that beats constantly, pumping blood through 60,000 miles of blood vessels, that's what's inside of you. If you put them end to end, they'd wrap around the earth twice at the equator. Very thin, I might add, but it would still do it. The point of the matter is, this is the power that's inside of you. Who are you? You're a miracle. The fact that you're alive is a miracle. The fact that you're living in these times is a miracle. If you start realizing that you're a miracle, that you're a gift, if that becomes part of your definition of yourself without a big ego about it, then all of a sudden life has a different quality. The types of actions you take are different. The way you treat people is different. And the results that you generate in your life will be transformed. And part of that second lesson also is realize that you don't want to limit the view you have of the people around you. See, you don't want to look around at people around you and judge them one day. One day they're being a jerk. You don't want them to decide they're a jerk for the rest of their life. If you do that, you've destroyed the relationship you could have had with them. You don't want somebody to define you by your behavior. Everybody gets screwed up every now and then. Everybody gets in a state and does something dumb. But you don't want to have people judge you that way, so don't judge others. Always see people as being more than they see themselves as being, and you'll be able to contribute to people. Plus, people tend to respond to the expectations you have for them. I know there are exceptions. But gosh, if you're going to make a mistake, why not make a mistake at seeing people as being more than they are than less than? And by the way, we all make this mistake and we all get angry when somebody else does it to us. I know, for example, our PR firm did what they call a share of mind survey. They represent some of the biggest companies in the U.S. And what they always do with their new clients is they go out and they send out a survey to the media. And they never say who their client is. They just do a generic survey. So they send out a survey and says, it basically says to the top people in the media, please let us pay you $60 an hour. It has a dollar attached to it. And it says, please take a minute and give us your opinion. And the opinion is, in this industry, who do you think the leader is? And they just try and find out how many people mention that company. Well, you know what's interesting? They did it for our industry, meaning personal development, human development training. They said, who do you think the leader is? We felt pretty confident people were going to say yes. You know what happened? Pat Nolan called me personally to say it was the most negative response she's ever gotten in her life. She said, Tony, you're in for a bit of a challenge, just so you know, because the attitude out there is horrible with the media. It was great with all the business people we sent, but in the media, it was terrible. I said, towards us? She said, no, they didn't even mention your name. They sent back the money. They never do that. She said, even if they don't fill it out, they keep the dollar. They said, we don't want this tainted money. These people are ripoff artists. They're all out to make money off other people. They don't care about anybody. Well, isn't that interesting? How are you going to go out and do an interview with somebody who already believes that and is supposedly open? That's a bit of a challenge. Now I can see why a few of my colleagues have gotten slashed so bad. I mean, I've taken a few punches every now and then, but I understand why now, because these people are looking for what's wrong. And remember, if you look for what's wrong in somebody, you'll find it. And by the way, I can't criticize 100%. I'd love to, but I've made the same mistake. Fortunately, I don't publish mine, so I can get by with it. But I remember, for example, the gentleman I'm interviewing this month, Wayne Dyer. You know, I went to go interview him, and I've been thinking about interviewing him for some time, and I didn't follow through because I'd heard some negative stuff about him. And I bought in a little bit. I wasn't sure, but I heard some things that would really bother me about, you know, what his level of commitment was to his kids and just, you know, a bunch of hearsay things. But then I sent my researchers out, and they found things in the media, you know, the articles and so forth that seemed to reinforce this view. And I started getting real judgmental, thinking, man, I don't know if I want to go interview somebody, you know, because obviously I pride myself on being, you know, so loving and connected to my family. And boy, if this person says their families, they don't have time for their family, I don't know if I want to be involved with this person. Well, who's to say whether those articles are accurate enough? I've seen enough articles to know they probably aren't. Probably misquoted, but you know what? For the moment, I started to get judgmental. And I thought, wait a second, Robbins, this is not who you are. Thank goodness I remembered who I am. I'm not judgmental. That's not what my life's about. And I caught myself being a jerk. You know, Wayne and I had met once before, but I really didn't get a chance to really visit with him or get to know him. So I stopped. And I started reading his books, and I started looking for what was great. And sure enough, when you look for what's great, you get great things. So I thought, this guy's great. He cares about people. He's got great ideas. He really wants to share with people. And so sure enough, my attitude became very excited and very enthusiastic. By the time I got to his front door where he was staying in Hawaii, I was so excited to meet him. He opened the door, and there were 7 children all running all over the place. And they all came up and jumped on me. They grabbed my legs, and one of them jumped up my arms. And they all said, you're a giant, you're a giant. Lift me up on your shoulders. And I was out there laughing and having so much fun with him for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes. I don't know what it was. We went off and just played. It was so great, and I thought, this guy is great. Look at his kids. I felt so funny and sheepish. But, you know, I really got my lesson when we sat down to talk. Because Wayne was in the middle of working on his book as well, and he was so gracious to give me the time to sit down and interview him. And here I'd heard all these negative things about him, and he'd heard negative things about me. I couldn't even believe it. He said, well, I was wondering whether I was really do this interview or not. I thought, what? What are you talking about? I really got the lesson. Boy, you can't ever limit your belief about who somebody is by what you hear from somebody else. And certainly you can't judge even by your own experience in the short term, because anybody can be less than resourceful some of the time. That's a fancy word for being a jerk. Haven't you been there? So don't prejudge. Hey, we all live in a glass house. Fortunately, Wayne didn't prejudge me, and I caught myself before I prejudged him. And as a result, I have the privilege of bringing his wisdom to you through this next tape. So I hope you enjoy it. So what's the third lesson? The third lesson is make certain that you expand your view of yourself, that you write it down, and that once you've expanded your view of yourself, that you live by that view, that you fuse with it. Accept that identity as being who you are right now and do whatever that person would do. Breathe the way that person would breathe. Stand the way that person would stand. Walk the way that person would walk. Talk the way that person would talk. Gesture the way that person would gesture. Live with the kind of passion that person would live with. I'm telling you, if you'll do this consistently, your brain will begin to make the linkage. And pretty soon, it won't just be a belief. You'll be convinced. You'll have a conviction that this is who you are. You're not trying to be something. It's who you are. And you'll never have to work on your behavior again. Your behavior will be automatic. How do you reinforce this? How do you reinforce any belief? You get some references. Think about the kinds of things that person would do and go do them. I can tell you years ago, one of the ways I began to define myself as a person who's really makes a difference, a person who's a contributor, a philanthropist, if you will. And at 18 years old, I started doing that in the prison systems. I joined Chino Prison System in California, where I came in and they matched me up with a young man who was going to get out in 2 years. And I came every month to visit with him, just donated my time. And I wasn't a seminar giver or anything like that. I just wanted to somehow touch somebody that I knew no one else probably would ever visit with. I wanted to see if I could have some kind of impact, if caring could really make a difference even in that environment. And it did. And Carlos, the man I visited there, I got him at one point. I brought him everybody's books, you know, Norman Vincent Peale and Think and Grow Rich and all those books that I was reading, As a Man Thinketh, Emerson's essays. I got him to start studying health. I got him to start running a couple miles a day. and his life was changed. And I never forgot that. Also, when I was 18, I started returning the favor that happened to me when I was about 11 years old, which many of you know about, which is at Thanksgiving, I started feeding people. And, you know, we got taken care of one time when we wouldn't have starved, but we were a family that, you know, we weren't going to have a Thanksgiving, but somebody showed up at the door. They wanted no credit. All they knew is that we were in need, and they gave us food. They even gave us a pan to cook things in, and it touched me. And so when I was 18, I also started doing that, and that's been my tradition ever since, every Thanksgiving, instead of going and just eating turkey. And what I do is I make sure that I go out and give thanks in the form of giving something back to other people. That's what that day means for me. And the first year I ever did it, I went out and just went to the store, and I bought food for as many families as I thought I could, put those bags in my car, put it on a pair of old jeans, and I went and started finding some people that needed it. I stopped by this one church, and they told me of some families, and I came as the delivery boy, not the person giving the food, because I wasn't there for the credit. And I wrote a little note that said, hey, this note is just to tell you that somebody cares about you. Have a great Thanksgiving, and all I ask of you is that someday you take good enough care of yourself that you can do this for someone else. And as the years went by, I began to realize that that note had to be written in other languages, because I brought it to some families that didn't speak English. But the bottom line is it became a tradition, and I started having my friends do it. And the reason I bring all this up is I want to mention to you, if your identity is one of a contributor, I'd like to offer you an opportunity. I've created an organization called the Anthony Robbins Foundation. And rather than talk to you about it on this tape, I'll probably talk about it on a tape on contribution as a whole. But let me just mention to you that this Thanksgiving, instead of just going out on Thanksgiving and eating, what would happen if you just took a few hours in the morning and you helped us to put together what we call our basket brigade? And you actually began to put together some food, not just in a box, but wrapped it up, food, maybe blankets and can openers for a homeless person. And you went out and you delivered this with a group of friends who are maybe Power Talk listeners or graduates of my programs to people who are in need. And again, you didn't take credit for it. You just went out and you saw them and gave it to them. I'm telling you, it will change your life. So if you're interested in this, please call my office and call for the Anthony Robbins Foundation, and we'll tell you how you can organize one in your city or how you can be part of a basket brigade there. But the point is, why do I do this? I've done it for years, and when nobody knew I was doing it, I didn't do it for acknowledgement. I did it for one reason. It's because it's part of who I am. That's the kind of person I am, and I know inside it must be the kind of person you are. And you don't have to do it my way, but whatever works for you, find a way to make sure you define yourself as a contributor, not just a person who's successful, not just a person who is doing something. And I don't mean just give somebody some money. Do something that takes a little effort on your part, something that'll make you connect with other people. I can promise you it'll change your life. One of the things you could do is you could join a prison system and visit somebody once a month. Or you could do it in an old folks home with somebody who doesn't have anyone to visit them. Or maybe you could do it with a child. We have a program called the Commit To Program, where you commit to help with something like the Basket Brigade once a year, and you commit to once a month do something for someone else consistently. If you're interested in the program, again, check us out. But the point is, expand your view of who you are and do things that demonstrate not only to other people, demonstrates to you that you really believe this is who you are, that you're reinforcing that so it becomes a lifestyle and not just a temporary thought pattern. I'm telling you, it'll enrich your life beyond what you've ever dreamed of. And by the way, when you think of them, one of the most painful experiences in life that people go through, one of them we have a term for, we call it an identity crisis. Why is that so painful for people? What is it? It's when people begin to question who they are and they have no idea who they're about to become. I mean, the most common example we talk about culturally, at least in America, is the person who turns 40 and they start to freak out. They'll do all kinds of weird things. What's really happening? Their identity, their perception of themselves is as a young person, but the outside environment, maybe graying hair or a little slower step or whatever it is they think is happening, is scaring them. They're afraid that it's going to change who they are and that the future identity they're going to have is going to be less attractive in some way. The truth of the matter is you can be 60, 70, or 80 and be just as young. It's our fear, though, of losing something that causes them to out and go buy some fancy cars or go do some weird things or divorce their husband or wife or whatever the case may be. We need to know that our identity is consistent through time, that whatever identity is today, that as it begins to evolve, we won't lose what we have. We'll just become even more. You never have to live in fear if you know that you're more than your behavior. You're more than your looks. You're more than what you eat or what you buy or what you wear or what you have. Who you are is never ending. Who you are is everlasting. Who you are is spirit. You know, I loved in the interview with Wayne, and again, I hope you'll take the time to listen to it. One of my favorite ways of defining identity, I just picked up from him. And that is, he said, you know, Tony, I think what we really are is not human beings having a spiritual experience. He said, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. Wow, what a great definition. So as you look at yourself and your life, again, remember you're more than you can define. And all you have to do is claim more of who you are. I know that sounds metaphysical, but it's true. So define yourself in a way that empowers you and live consistent with it. And make sure you define yourself as a being that's unlimited, because only through that true definition will you begin to tap more of your power and your potential. You'll never tap at all because your potential is always growing. And by the way, that taps a trigger in my mind. Unlimited is the word. This month's book summary is Unlimited Wealth. It'll help you once again to expand your view of the world itself. It'll change your beliefs and give you a great strategy. But for now, here's your assignment for next month. Number one, once again, define who you are. It's critical. Define how you see yourself now. Two, expand that view. Three, do the exercise where you see, hear, feel, and act as that person. Four, make certain you have a plan where you're going to start doing things that that person would do. And five, as you now feel and behave this way, make certain that you tell everybody around you who you are. Make sure they hold you to that standard as well. I've really enjoyed visiting with you this month. I know I've gone crazy on this issue, but I hope I've got across one foundational idea. And that is this. The beliefs that will shape your life the most are the beliefs that you developed about who you are. Change your identity and you'll change your life. So do your exercises. You might want to listen to this tape more than once. Keep asking yourself the question, who am I? Keep defining yourself in larger terms and make sure your behavior is consistent with it. And I'll look forward to being with you or an expanded version of you next month. Till then, live with passion.